It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence. I'm me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day here from the LRN.FM network from Phoenix, Arizona, in the beautiful, beautiful studios of The Farm. Freedom's Phoenix Farm up in North Phoenix. Yeah, we're farming now. And what we've been distracted by what's going on in Japan. And while that's happening, I'll tell you, there is a gentleman that testified before Congress that's speaking tomorrow night at an economic discussion group that I go to every month, and I just can't bring myself to, you know, waste the time because I know what his rhetoric is. It is radical Islam needs to be opposed, and radical Islam this, and they do this and that, and we got to go and bomb, and we're the aircraft carriers. And my thing is, I'm going, you know, as soon as we stop all the wars of aggression, as soon as we get out of all the foreign entanglements, the military bases, and stop bombing people and do it, you know, as soon as we stop trying to do regime change in the name of American interest, whatever the heck that means this week, as soon as we stop that, then we can talk about all the leftover Muslims that hate us. You know, and until then, I'm just, I can feel it. It's a 2012 election year. Well, because of inflation and food prices and a lot of other things going on, all of a sudden, you know, people that are living on a few dollars a day, which make up, you know, half of the people in Middle Eastern countries, they're going, you know what, we can need something better. And they are in revolt. Well, let's go ahead and talk about Bahrain. We have a friend of the show, he's been on before, Hussein Abdullah. He is going to talk to us about, you know, what's behind this U.S.-backed Bahrain regime and what role Saudi Arabia is playing in it now, because it's starting to amp up. By the time Japan news starts to go away, by the time, you know, that's kind of settled and get stable, and it may take even months, by then, the Middle East may be totally different from what it is now. Hussein, I got you there?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Please give us an update on what's going on in Bahrain.
Well, on last Friday, Secretary Gates was in Bahrain, and publicly he encouraged the regime to hold talk and adapt serious political reform. Everyone was encouraged by his remarks. Guess what? After one day he left, Saudi troops invaded Bahrain. And we here in the United States, our government is not considering those troops to be invaders. So basically, the assertion is, or the feelings on the street in the country is, that Gates basically gave them the green light. They go ahead and do it and crush the opposition and crush the peaceful protesters. And today there is a massacre in the country. Over 1,000 people have been injured. Serious injury. So far, 2 confirmed deaths, 7 unconfirmed, missing people, fires, rubber bullets. Bahrain became a ghost town, and the situation is getting worse, and we're not hearing anything from our administration, which actually concerned me that, yes, there is some kind of agreement or green light that take care of this problem within a week or two, and we're going to let you do it. But you have to finish it in certain amount of time. You know, another country invading Bahrain to protect its government, it is unheard of and should not be acceptable by us.
Okay, so this is what we're looking at. We have Bahrain, which is about the, I mean, it's an island off the coast of Saudi Arabia, and it's in the Persian Gulf. It's only about the landmass, about three times the size of Manhattan, okay? So this is not a very large country, but one of the assets there that the American interest is the Fifth Fleet is ported there. Is that correct?
That's right.
So, I mean, you know, I would think if you got the Fifth Fleet of the United States of America in the Persian Gulf and Bahrain in your country there, that it's really, it's America. I mean, you know, as far as they're looking, you know, guess what? You know, our prime directive is the military, the naval base there, it be a function, and especially now. So what do they do? U.S. troops going to go in there? Heck no. They're going to go by sea and across a long bridge that connects Saudi Arabia to this country. And here comes Saudi Arabian tanks and military, and they go, guess what? You're not allowed to protest anymore. So why are the people protesting against whom? I mean, you know, we have, of course, who's the stated monarch there, who's the stated political leader, but are they really perceived by the people there as being autonomous from the United States and Saudi Arabia, or do they, the people, see them as just an arm of?
Well, especially with the recent development, the people are holding both Saudi Arabia and the United States responsible for what is taking place. Because let's face it, there are 6,000 soldiers, American soldiers in Bahrain. If we wanted to stop this bloodshed, we could easily by just being a peacekeeping force. Add to that, I'm not asking even a single American blood to be wasted. Because both Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, they are allies, they are strong allies, they are our puppet, our dictators. They are the one who do the dirty job for us in the region. For us just to tell them stop it, they will stop it. The recent invasion led by Saudi Arabia into Bahrain and us not even considering such move as an invasion, tell me that. Whether we really want to see democracy in the Middle East. Does democracy in the Middle East help our interests? Does democracy in the Middle East make us weaker in the region? All these questions now are being answered, not because of what took place in Egypt or Tunisia, no, to see the reality in Bahrain, because Egypt and Tunisia don't have resources that we need. They don't have oil. They're not in a region that is strategic to us. However, Bahrain is in the Persian Gulf country, which has the largest known oil reserve. Add to that, Bahrain is the base for our Fifth Fleet. So this unity, this unholy alliance between the United States and Saudi Arabia against the people of Bahrain, it is a shameful thing. And for our Congress and our administration to agree on such a move, it is just appalling and should not be acceptable by any decent human being.
Well, I mean, was it ever... let's get some history of Bahrain. I mean, I can't imagine that it was ever autonomous from Western control for at least the last 100-something years. I mean, it's always been somebody ruling them from afar. And what kind of generation has grown up now thinking otherwise? Have they been schooled to think that they are an autonomous regime or an autonomous government, or do they grow up knowing that they're really just a puppet state of Saudi Arabia and the U.S.?
Well, the struggle of democracy in Bahrain is not something that took place on February 14th when these recent protests took place. It's been going on since the 50s, since the labor movement in the country. So this struggle is not new. However, why it's different this time? It's different this time because the movement is led by youth, led by those who are less than 50 years old. The internet revolution took them, or the process of the internet revolution.
Okay, that's what we'll talk about when we come back, Hussein. We're going to break. When we come back with Hussein Abdullah. Now, he's the director of Americans for Democracy and Human Rights in Bahrain. So I'm interested to see, you know, where we're going to be in a very short amount of time, because this won't last very long. So we need to get the information now.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story, same old story, same old song and dance.
Yeah, it's the same old song and dance. We've heard this before, man. It's just the same old, same old, same old. You know, the news, you can plug it in what's now, 20 years from now, same. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, now, same. You know, it's there are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. And what role has the American government played in this? Right now, as our guest, Hussein Abdullah, he's the director of Americans for Democracy and Human Rights in Bahrain. He had been telling us about Bahrain declares a state of emergency. Now, the king of Bahrain is like, you know, help me, please. Well, you got the Fifth Fleet there. You know, the United States Navy, they got thousands of troops sitting there. Hey, man, we're out of this. It wouldn't be prudent at this juncture for us to have any kind of anything, really. Really? You think they're totally outside of this deal? That they're not having any influence? There's somebody they're not talking to on the phone? So, you know, it's it comes after the day after 1,000 Saudi troops and 500 United Arab Emirates police officers were deployed in Bahrain. You know, this is after the king said, hey, man, you know, come help me out. Now, they called for these troops after thousands of protesters just started, you know, flowing all over the streets over this last weekend. You know, so this is a direct challenge to the authority. And how are they going to deal with this? They're going to what? They have to capitulate to every demand or they don't. And are they going to deal from strength or weakness or how? So this is what I want to understand from Hussein Abdullah. Hussein, explain to me, what are the protesters demanding? What would make them happy? What do they want?
Initially, when it started on February 14th, the demands were releasing all the political prisoners, including those who were sentenced, holding those who tortured the political prisoners responsible and putting them on trial, asking the prime minister who's been ruling the country for 40 years to step down, new constitution that is agreed on by the people, more power to the parliament, political reform in general. However, as things got in worse, people lost their life, people were injured, brutally attacked. The demand escalated to complete removal of the ruling family from Bahrain, which means the complete removal of Al Khalifa from Bahrain. So the demand, as we speak right now, is whether the people of Bahrain going to live in Bahrain or Al Khalifa going to live in Bahrain. And obviously, Al Khalifa decided that, well, if I have to, I'll just rule without you.
Okay, this is one thing I'm seeing also reading here that Iran has had their say on this, so Bahrain pulls their ambassadors. We have the United States, Hillary Clinton, coming up and generally speaking about the Middle East and all of these protests, that the governments need to be restrained, not to, you know, bend the violence, not to try and force their way on the people, not to, you know. And at the same time that she was giving this speech, I think it was at George Mason University, we have ex-CIA analyst Ray McGovern standing there wearing a shirt that, you know, give peace a chance or something. And they're beating him up, bloodied, bruised, arrested. And then they dropped charges and said it wouldn't be prudent at this juncture to go having a trial on this. Because the very thing that she's telling Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State of the United States, trying to tell the governments in other countries to be tolerant of free speech and peaceful expression, in front of her, they're beating up someone wearing a shirt. So I'm going, and she obviously saw him. And I'm going, all right. So here we have Aminajad's ministers or whatever, his government. They're coming to having their say on this. So then they pull. And it just reeks of the United States government directing this thing. And I'm going, what is the position in Iran? How is it that they even have a comment? What's their connection? What do they care?
Well, obviously what they care about is two things. One, they don't want Saudi Arabia to get more powerful, and they consider that if Saudi Arabia moves into another country, it's like they're violating the sovereignty of another country that is so close to Iran. And if such thing is done, then you basically have the Saudi are much stronger facing Iran. The other aspect, which is more important than the first one, is the Bahrain population. The majority of Bahrain are Shia Muslim, and Iran is Shia Muslim. So it's like you are my brother, and I'll do my best to protect you. And from that standpoint, the Iranian are showing their muscle that, look, even if the United States is going to support the Saudi move to invade Bahrain, we might come and play here and protect you. However, I don't think Iran is serious. I don't think Iran is going to put their troops in jeopardy for Bahrain, because they might drawn into a long war, and then maybe even the United States will have a reason, a good reason, to attack Iran and start something that Iran is trying to avoid for a long time.
Well, is there a... See, if I'm looking into the future, let's imagine this, Hussein. We look, let's give it a year, okay? It's, the oil thing, the nuclear thing, the 2012 presidential election things kind of going on. We're in the middle of all this and so on. What would be a popular outcome? What would make everybody happy except the United States government? I mean, would the Iranians, would the Shiite and the Sunnis, would they accept the Fifth Fleet being based in Bahrain? Is that a goal to get rid of that? Is that a sticking point? Or is that even on the table? Does anybody care?
No, I don't believe it's on the table. But look, we really need to face ourselves. Why we see two realities? When Gaddafi attacks his people, we are all up in arm and even talking about no-fly zone and human rights, and President Obama come on TV and say Gaddafi must go. But when we have a situation where another country is invading Bahrain to kill the people of Bahrain and to protect its ruling elite, which is not even 1% of the population, we are just hush. Talking about it. This is a serious problem. This is like if the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan 27 years ago and we just sat and did nothing. This shows what kind of hidden and secret dirty relationship we have with these sheikhdom and these regimes in the Persian Gulf country, that we're willing to give up our values of believing in human rights and human dignity for oil and Fifth Fleet base, although we can protect all that and having the people of Bahrain also live in democratic rule.
Yeah, when we come back, this is where we get down to it. This is the point that I'm making. You have a country that is the three times the size of Manhattan Island. You have it, with the token king doing the interest of Saudi Arabia and ultimately the United States. We have the Fifth Fleet there, which is no small task. Thousands of U.S. military there. And our role should be what? Maybe leave.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
It's me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix Farm. We're getting ready. We have Hussein Abdullah on. He's director of Americans for democracy and human rights in Bahrain. And the first thing I got to ask you, Hussein, is why? Why are you concerned about democracy and human rights in Bahrain? Are you from there? Do you have friends there? What is your interest?
Yes, I'm originally from Bahrain. I have family there, and I have even lost some family member in the struggle for democracy since I was born. I mean, this is my passion to see my country where I originally came from, my motherland, live and enjoy the freedom that I enjoy in this country, where I can criticize anyone, any government official, and know very well that I'm not going to be tortured or thrown in jail, at least in most cases.
And yeah, I wouldn't give it a blanket statement like that anymore. But in comparison, I'm sure you're absolutely correct. You know, the one thing is that Washington has sent Jeffrey Feltman, he's Assistant Secretary of State, to Bahrain to encourage talks between the government and the opposition. And I'm wondering, there's like somebody in the opposition they're going to go meet? How is there a structure? Is it just a bunch, thousands of teenagers out there saying, heck no, we want whatever? Or is there some kind of coalition or group? Because I get this. I need your help on this, Hussein, because I hear this in Libya. I hear this in Egypt. I hear this. It's always the French president, Sarkozy, has identified somebody that they're having meet in Paris that's going to be their liaison to all the people in the field protesting. We have the United States State Department says, yeah, this is the guy that we need to talk to. And I remember this as a young man in the 70s and going through how Yasser Arafat was used to fill that role. And as time went on, you just got to understand he was just a tool of the people that were saying they were meeting with him. So who would they be meeting with? Who are they bringing to the table? Is there any one person, or should there be?
There are several political groups, opposition groups in Bahrain. However, Mr. Feltman is not going to meet with everyone. He's only going to meet with those that we like, those that we think they are reasonable according to our standards of reasonability. So, yes, he is going to meet with an opposition group that has some demands. They need some preconditions. However, you know, the chances of that dialogue to be successful, I see it very slim, because the people who started this movement are the youth, and their demand is clear as we speak right now, the removal of the regime, especially with the atrocities that are going on in Bahrain as we speak.
Wow. So we're not willing to, we're talking about an isolated island country that's relatively small, that if we wanted to use the force, I mean, it's not like they can go hide in the desert somewhere, or they got really long snorkels to their undersea village or something. There's not, I mean, they are contained. And we went through this at the Republican National Convention, I remember back in, I guess it was the 04 convention, where they just went through with fences on the street and just swooped up all of these hundreds, if not thousands, of people, and they just detained them here in America. And to think that they wouldn't do the same kind of thing over there, and who's on your side? You have the United States government, the United States Navy, military. You have the current rulers, the regime, the king in Bahrain. You have Saudi Arabia. And on the other side, you have, you know, maybe 5,000, 6,000, 10,000. I mean, it's a small country. You could only have so many. I mean, to think that you're going to have 1 million people in the street, heck, there's not that many people there. I think there's, 800 and something thousand people that live. They've had more people in the streets in Cairo than exist in Bahrain. So I'm just going there. If there was ever an example of just brute state force being able to impose their will on someone, Bahrain is it. And that's exactly why we have the United Arab Emirates and we have Saudi Arabia bringing troops in to quell the rebellion. Now, they're going to meet with people and say, okay, you know, we'll let you save face a little bit here. We'll give you something. Let me tell you what you're not going to get. You're not going to get self-rule. You are not going to get where we are not ultimately in charge. And they will go to whatever violent techniques they need to impose that. Now, I just need to know how much they need to pony up, to bribe them or buy them off. Now, the king of Saudi Arabia, he came back with $37 billion to give to his people to kind of quell them. So I'm just, you understand where I'm going with this? I don't see that. This will be a very interesting confrontation because the state has all the advantages in this one. And on the other side, they have what? What's going in favor of the protesters? What gives them power? What is it?
Look, I never seen my countrymen the way they are behaving today. You're talking about people that are not fearing bullets. You're talking about people injured and still want to be on the street. This enthusiasm, this empowerment, I never seen it before. When you are facing such people, I don't care what kind of bullet or what kind of machine gun you have, because there is a limit of atrocities. I mean, are you going to kill the whole nation?
I don't know. I mean, all I'm thinking of is the movie Avatar, where they're going, hey, man, it looks bad on a balance sheet for a company. It's bad press. We'd soon not do it. But when it comes down to it, man, start the tanks. So I mean, do you think they wouldn't do it?
Look, this is what I think is happening. There is a green light from the United States to attack these people, to scare them. Yes, kill a few, maybe even kill several tens of them, hundreds, and then that will scare the rest of them, and they'll just go home, and you know, everything will go back to normal, and you're going to be our favorite dictator, and we're going to support you. But I don't think that's going to happen. Yes, they will kill people, but people will not go home. They'll be even more emboldened. I'm talking about women are going out on the streets with their children because they believe that they better die with dignity than live with disrespect and like a slave. You know, the slave and master mentality in Bahrain will end by this revolution. This is a revolution by the people, and history teaches people eventually prevail. And this is probably the time that the people of Bahrain will prevail, whether we like it here or not.
Okay, so they prevail in the sense of people understanding what the resistance is for and about, and emotionally and philosophically and culturally, they may prevail. But do you think that they will occupy the seats of power?
It is very much possible. It is very much possible because now it's an open war. They know very well there is no way this regime is going to back off. And they not need to be backing off, because if they back off, that's it.
Do they have arms? I mean, is this an armed revolt? I mean, I know they're trying to be peaceful and they're going, you know, but once they start mowing down with machine guns, you know, which is where we're going here, are the people going to resist with force?
Well, they're resisting. When you are occupied, then the resistance is justified. Do they have arms? No, there are no arms. But I will not underestimate the power of the people in front of bullets. You know, you need a strong person, you need a brave person to fire a bullet. When you have bare chest men come and ask you without the fear of death, I think you're going to see that person who has the gun will be running away from the unarmed person.
Well, we're going to talk about that when we come back. Bullets have been fired on both sides. We'll talk about it when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with Hussein Abdullah on Bahrain. We'll be right back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
I want to break free. I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied, I don't need you. I've got to break free.
God knows. And everybody else knows.
God knows.
I just want to break free. And that is the sentiment of a lot of people around the world. Now, let's go ahead and do a little bit on some facts on I got from the CIA fact sheet on Bahrain. Okay, so it's 1.2 million people there. So it's just over a million, 1.25 million people. The average, the age structure goes like this. 20% of the people are 14 years of age and younger. 77% are under 64 and between 15 and 64. And there's only 2.5% over 65 years of age. Their median age is 31 years of age. Now, that's like about 5-6 years per over what Egypt and Libya and a lot of these other countries are. So we have a little bit more mature population there. And but 89% of the total population lives in what's considered an urban area. Well, it's like a big giant Manhattan anyway. So we have the news today is that what started this latest round, and you never know what really happens. I mean, you know, what they say happened, what really happened don't mean nothing. But what they're saying is that there were three people that were killed. You know, it's a relatively low number considering the gravity of the situation, but they're saying the first one killed was a police officer or someone in favor of the regime was shot by someone from the crowd. So then they opened fire, two people, protesters were killed. Now, is that what really happened? I don't know. But once you start having death, you know, there's always more. So I'm looking at when we have a the fullness of time is going to bring about what? Now, we have Hussein Abdullah on. Now, he's the director of Americans for Democracy and Human Rights in Bahrain. And you spend time in Washington, D.C., don't you? Aren't you talking to congressmen?
I do advocate for issues of human rights and democracy in the United States Congress.
Well, so the congressmen say what? They go, hey, man, go talk to the Navy? I mean, talk to Hillary? I mean, yeah. They don't care? What?
It's funny. You're saying it in an indirect way. I mean, they've been helpful a lot, to be fair to them. But since the situation escalated today and yesterday, I'm not getting any responses from them. They're acting like they don't even know me. They're not returning my emails or my phone calls. And I completely understand because the word is that the administration basically taking care of the situation. And we know very well the foreign policy of this country is controlled by the administration, by the executive branch. And Congress does not have that much influence on it.
Well, what is your opinion of what the administration's policy in Bahrain is? I mean, what do they want? They just want, hey, man, we don't care what you do. We just want our ships there. What?
They will do everything possible. That means even if so many people are killed to protect Al-Khalifa, because they believe Al-Khalifa will serve our interests in Bahrain and in the region better than if there's a true democracy. And at the same time, they might, you know, give you a bone here or there and tell you, well, you want some reform. And instead of 100% reform, we might give you 40% or 30%. And you should be very glad that you even got that. Don't even ask for anything more because that's all what you're getting. And that basically tells us that, you know, democracy is maybe for us here, but we believe that Middle Eastern don't deserve it. Our freedom is for us here, but Middle Eastern don't deserve it. And I think that is just a disgusting double standard that needs to be stopped and let the people themselves decide. It's not like the people of Bahrain asking the United States to come and free them like we did in Iraq or something or what we're doing in Afghanistan. No, they're saying just leave us alone. We will take care of our own problem. We will discuss it with the rulers of Bahrain. And if we want them, we'll keep them. And if we don't want them, we'll get rid of them.
Now,
and I think we are so much in relation with Al-Khalifa that we're just not going to let them go easily.
Well, this one thing that is of interest to me is a lot of the people are wearing white. It's symbolizing that they are ready to die as martyrs. And do you really think that is, I mean, this is it? They're, you know, when we leave the square, it's free or dead, you know, one or the other, live free or die attitude. Is it really that serious?
Yes. as I told you, I never seen the country, my countrymen acting this way. I don't know where this bravery came from, but it did come from somewhere. And it is either give me death or give me liberty. That's basically what's taking place in Bahrain. And I expect that we're going to see much more casualties. But in the end, the question is, who's going to win? And I'm going to be on the side of the people, because that's what history teaches.
You know, will democracy bring about what you want? I mean, let's think about it. When you say democracy in Bahrain, how do you define that? What is it you mean?
I mean, by democracy, it's a simple term. I mean, majority rule with respect to minority rights, where a majority can rule the country, decide what the fate of the country will be and how they want to be rule it. However, they cannot discriminate or violate the rights of the minority.
So it's kind of like a constitutional republic kind of thing.
Or a liberal democracy.
Well, you know, I'm just wondering, you come up with a government system that works, you let me know, man. We tried it. It hasn't worked out that good.
Well, I mean, when you have an experiment, and we did not try it, so let's try it in Bahrain and see what the results will be.
Well, what do you think it is that they would structure themselves as? Do you have a preference? Are they advocating a preference? Do they want a parliament? Do they want, you know, a two-house Congress? Do they want, you know, executive judicial? Or are they, you know, I mean, how do they want to do this?
They are advocating for parliamentary rule, parliamentary democracy.
Okay, you know, then that gives voice to a lot of fractional representations of different points of interest, but how many are there? Is there one main? Are there five different ones? Is there, you know, Save the Whales Party? I mean, tell us how it breaks out.
Well, you have major eight to ten political groups in Bahrain. They have different objectives. Some of them, for example, are more liberal than the other or more progressive than the other. Some of them focus on more economic issues than political issues. So some of them have an ideology, like they're nationalist or they're more into labor movement or they're leftist, or maybe they're conservative, maybe they're more religious. So you have different groups with different agenda. Right now, what they unite on is they want freedom for Bahrain. They want democracy. They want free and fair elections. They want to live under no fear from a brutal dictator.
Yeah, you know, that election thing, that hasn't worked out well for us either. I don't trust government, counting. Man, I just, you know, so I'm looking to see a lot of these changes around the Middle East. They may come up with, you know, something that maybe even I could support, but we'll see. You know, if I had to vote between whatever type of government and none, you know, none's getting my vote so far. So I'm looking at the future where you have some kind of a mechanism, and simple things like we have one of the princes in Saudi Arabia coming out, okay, maybe we can let women drive. And I'm going, wow, they're still not driving? You know, so are women driving in Bahrain?
Yes, of course. No, Bahrain is a completely different story. Bahrain is a very progressive society, where you have a complete opposite society from Saudi Arabia. There is no enforcement of a dress code or any enforcement of any religion. You have the Jews, you have the Hindus, you have the Christians. All of them have their own worship places, and they worship freely in the country.
So what is the opposition primarily focused on? Is that, you know...
Political rights. Democratic rights.
Well, I mean, but how does it manifest itself? Are people poor? Are people oppressed? Are people, any dissent is squashed like a bug? What?
Yes, they are oppressed, and as I told you, torture is used heavily against political prisoners.
Hussein Abdullah, director in Washington, D.C., meeting with congressmen, wanting to get their help. And now they're giving the cold shoulder as violence breaks out in Bahrain as United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia soldiers go in to protect, I don't know, the 5th Fleet that happens to be stationed there. man, entangling alliances while we're entangled in Bahrain. Hussein Abdullah, thanks for coming on and helping us understand what's going on, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We'll be right back. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.